You're listening to The Dating Den with dating and relationship badass and best-selling author Marnie Batista. Every week, you'll get the raw truth from top experts and real people on the important dating, sex, and relationship issues you want to know about. So if you're ready for true talk that's authentic and unfiltered, and you're not afraid to be called out on your stuff, then you're ready for what's next.
The Dating Den, episode 51 with Dr. Kristen Neff. The secret skill nobody talks about that you must have to make a quality man fall in love with you. Ladies, welcome back to The Dating Den. And I am super excited for you to be here today because literally we were able to score an interview with the woman who I think made the most significant impact in my healing over the last few years. And that is Dr. Kristen Neff. So before I go into your bio, I just want to say thank you so much for being here, Dr. Neff.
I'm really glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
So for those of you who don't know, Dr. Neff is an associate professor of human development and culture, educational psychology department at the University of Texas at Austin. And she has spent years pioneering research on self-compassion. She, in my experience of sort of studying personal development and, you know, all this work on becoming the best humans we can be, I think this piece on self-compassion is one that is really the sort of secret sauce. And during Kristen's last year of graduate school, she became interested in Buddhism, and she's been practicing meditation in the insight meditation tradition ever since. And while doing her postdoctoral work, she decided to conduct research on self-compassion, which is a central construct in Buddhist psychology and one that hadn't yet been examined empirically. And as a result of that work, she has just come up with so much data and practical tools that will impact your ability to be a resilient dater, to be feminine, to achieve all the things that you want in your life without burning out your adrenals, and ultimately being a really awesome partner. So with that, Dr. Neff, you know, let's, for people who are like, what the heck is self-compassion anyway? what is it, and how is it different from self-acceptance, and why is it important?
Yeah, or things like self-pity. I mean, the thing is, people hear the word self-compassion and they think, what does that mean, right? And so it's important to define how we're using the term. So, you know, it's actually easy to start with compassion for others, right? Because from my point of view, compassion for self is the same as compassion for others. It's just that usually we give compassion outward, but not inward, right? So when we feel compassion for someone, first of all, it means that someone is suffering in some way. So maybe they failed or made a mistake or they're struggling with something in their lives. And we feel compassion, first of all, there's a sense of kindness and an urge to help in some way, right? There's also, you have to be aware that they're suffering, right? If you just walk past that homeless person on the street and don't even notice them, you can't give them compassion. So compassion requires being aware of suffering, responding with kindness and a desire to help. And also really important to distinguish compassion from pity is the sense that, you know, all human beings struggle and suffer. It's, you know, no one's better than anyone else. It's not looking down on people. It's just saying, hey, this could be me in different circumstances. So self-compassion really involves those three components. It means being willing to be aware when you're struggling, when you're having a hard time, responding with kindness, support, encouragement. And also, again, it's not self-pity because we are just remembering that, you know, all people struggle, all people make mistakes. This is part of the human condition. It's not woe is me. It's just saying life is difficult for everyone.
So what's really interesting, and I'd love to know what the data shows, but I think for women, you know, we grow up almost sort of focused on, you know, I've got to do better. What can I do better? Almost, you know, in the space of, if I am hard on myself, that's what sort of motivates me. And it's so debilitating, right? But it's actually not effective in motivating someone to sort of do better or achieve.
Yeah. We actually find in our research that's the number one block to self-compassion. People think if they're kind and supportive to themselves, they're going to, you know, be lazy bums, right? They won't achieve anything. But that's not the case at all. What we find in the research, and there's a lot of research to support this, that if you are harshly self-critical, you know, always tearing yourself down, first of all, you're going to become afraid of failure, that the risks are just too high if you fail. So you're going to give up trying. When you do fail, you're more likely to give up. You're going to develop a lot of performance anxiety. You know, anxiety over failure is going to mess up with your ability to achieve, right? Whereas if you are kind of supportive to yourself, you're less afraid of failure. You know, it's okay to fail. You learn from your mistakes. When you do fail, you're more likely to pick yourself up and try again. So that basically people who are more self-compassionate are more able to reach a goal, it's not less able to do so.
And I think this is like the number one success factor, you know, in dating, right? Because basically, if you have the experience or the lens that, you know, if the date isn't a match, that it's a failure,
yeah.
Right? Right? Or you're afraid of succeeding, right? And so that's sort of also, you know, like, what if he finds out, you know, that I'm really like this or the other thing?
Yes.
It's like it makes you not want to go out there and date, because dating actually feels really hard if you don't have this tool of self-compassion in your tool belt.
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, if you equate success or failure on a date, especially like with your worth as a person, then you're really in deep doo-doo, if you don't mind me saying so, right? So really what we're doing with self-compassion is, first of all, saying, okay, this is all an experiment, you know, this is part of the human learning process. Some dates will go well, some dates won't go so well. You know, that's only human, and what can I learn from this process? You know, regardless of whether or not it's a match with the other person, I'm going to like and support and be there for myself, you know, regardless of what the other person says. And with that type of supportive attitude, you're much more likely, first of all, to stay in the game, even if things aren't working so well, and to eventually, you know, hopefully meet someone who does meet your needs.
And the other thing that I think is really important, that what self-compassion, you know, is not, I think a lot of the women that we talk to, they're like, oh, well, you know, I take care of myself. Like, I'll treat myself to a massage, or, you know, I'll go get a pedicure. But that's not really this concept of being with yourself in your suffering. So let's be specific. Like, what does that look like, actually? So you go on a date and, you know, he said he was going to call you back and he didn't. And you're like, ugh, here I go again. I should have, you know. So what do you do that's different?
Right. So what you do is basically, what would you say to a girlfriend who called you up and said, listen, I had this date planned and he didn't call? Would you say, oh, it must be because you're a loser, you know?
Right.
No, probably not, right? So you say the type of things to yourself that you would say to a good friend, you know, hey, it has nothing to do with you, you know, it doesn't mean anything, keep trying, don't take it personally, right? So basically, you're a good supportive friend to yourself when times are difficult, as opposed to taking things so personally and, you know, judging yourself as a horrible person because things didn't turn out very well.
So one of my favorite tools that you have is the use of sort of being there with yourself. And there's like a somatic part, you know, where you're actually engaging, you know, the physical touch. And I know there's a whole piece around this that takes your brain and puts it sort of like in a different space so you can actually be there for yourself. So what's the actual tool that you use where you can get that part of your brain online that can support you in dating?
Right. Well, we call it supportive touch. Basically, you might put your hands on your heart or hold your own hand or give yourself a hug or maybe cradle your face in the palms of your hands. You know, people are different in terms of what feels comforting and supportive. But basically, as human beings, we have this whole attachment and caregiving system. So in the presence of warmth and gentle touch, and especially with kind of soothing, kind vocalization, think of tone of voice, we feel safe, we feel connected to other people, right? We can actually, believe it or not, do that for ourselves. So if you put your hands on your heart, for instance, or some other gesture that feels good, what you're doing is you are priming your own attachment system. You're releasing oxytocin and opiates. You feel connected. You feel safe. So sometimes, you know, our brains can't go there because we're too full of the story of how inadequate we are. Just a simple, kind touch can often help your body relax and feel safe. And that actually paves the way for, you know, a kinder internal dialogue. So, you know, it is touchy-feely, but there's science behind why touchy-feely works. And we really encourage it as kind of a shortcut to self-compassion.
Yeah, when I teach my clients this, you know, it's like massive, massive change from how they normally are with themselves when something's not going right. And it's like a shock to the system, right? To actually be there with yourself in your suffering and activating the way your brain operates so that you can move out of that negative internal dialogue with yourself like pretty quickly once you activate that kind touch.
That's right. So normally we're just lost in the storyline of what's happening. You know, I'm so terrible. What's happened is so terrible. And we're just kind of lost in it. Because we're so used to giving compassion and kindness to other people, what happens when we give it to ourselves is we kind of like do some perspective taking. We step outside of ourselves. We aren't so lost in the storyline. And we look at ourselves almost like we would look at a friend and say, wow, you know, you're really struggling. You need some kindness and support right now. How can I help? So we're kind of taking a self-to-self relationship, the same type we might use, again, with those we care about. And that slight act of perspective taking gives us a lot more balance. And again, perspective, when we're trying to figure out what we do. So it's a really important tool for us to help deal with our difficult emotions. Instead of being engulfed by them, we can kind of relate to them with some wisdom.
Yeah, because I always, you know, when people sign up to like start dating, right, like Dating with Dignity, I'm like, okay, you know, raise your hand. I solemnly swear to experience all of my emotions, you know, including but not limited to, right? Like it's everything when you put yourself, you're putting yourself out there. It's so tender, you know, and not having this tool in your back pocket is like a real disadvantage because you're gonna get hurt. Your feelings are gonna get hurt. You're gonna have all your feelings. This piece can like be a game changer, yeah?
It really can. I mean, it's amazing when people start realizing how much they're able to support themselves in times of need. I mean, yes, it's wonderful if you have good friends or family who can also support you, but you know, what if they aren't there in the moment? Or what if they say the wrong thing? I mean, right? So only you know what you really need, and you can really meet a lot of your needs for yourself with self-compassion. You know, it's not like we'd stop needing other people, but we aren't wholly dependent on them. So it's a great strength and resource.
It is. I always, when I use this tool myself, I liken it to like falling into my own arms, you know, and just being like, oh, I always cry every time, I'm just like, oh, you know, I'm like there for myself. So it's super huge. So you actually studied this tool, and in the research you did, you learned that having the ability to have self-compassion will actually also impact your romantic relationship. So it's not just a tool for yourself. It actually impacts how you show up in relationships. So tell me about the study you did. Yeah, what did you find?
Right. So, and it's funny because a lot of people think, well, self-compassion is selfish, isn't it? Shouldn't I just be focused on meeting other people's needs? But what we found is that in romantic relationships, self-compassionate people were described by their partners as being much better relationship partners, right? They were described as being more giving, less controlling, more willing to grant autonomy in their relationships, more intimate, more affectionate, less verbally aggressive, right? So basically, people were much more satisfied in their relationship when their partners were self-compassionate. So what's going on, right? And so again, you know, we can kind of understand some of the processes that go on in relationship when we're self-compassionate. So first of all, when you are not self-compassionate, when you beat yourself up and you expect you just get all your needs for compassion and kindness and support met by your partner, what happens that one day when your partner isn't available? Or maybe says the wrong thing, or doesn't meet your needs exactly the way you want them met, well, then you're gonna start to get cranky and needy and complainy, right? But if you can meet a lot of your needs for yourself, right? So you're like your first go-to resource for giving yourself the comfort and soothing you need, well, then you're actually going to have more resources available to give to your partner. You can be more forgiving. They don't have to get it right every single time. You know, you've got more play, more flexibility, because you also have yourself as a source of support. Another thing we know that happens in relationships is that, you know, if you're always focused on meeting other people's needs, you know, like, okay, you're more important, I'll do whatever you want, then subordinating your needs to your partner means you aren't authentic, and eventually you're going to resent it and get angry in the relationship. So self-compassionate people, they don't subordinate their needs. They don't prioritize them either. It's not like my needs are the only ones that are important. They compromise more in relationships and they're also more authentic in the relationships. They can be authentic because they've got their own back. They aren't totally relying on validation from their partners. So being authentic, compromising, and having more to give in a relationship is definitely going to help both parties.
Yeah, and I always say, you know, when you have this sort of, you know, love yourself.
Yes.
Right? And it's not just like, oh, I think I'm a good person, you know. It's actually that you're in action of loving yourself is all of these pieces that you're talking about that then allow you to show up in a way in a relationship, which, you know, in Dating with Dignity Land, we say you're truly irresistible, because that way the man doesn't need to feel like, oh my God, like, you know, if I'm not keeping her up emotionally, she falls, because then that's too much of a burden, right, for your partner.
That's right. That's called being needy. And also, it's not even just like loving yourself, I'm a good person. It's actually loving yourself in spite of your flaws and imperfections.
Yes.
What it's doing is embracing humanity, realizing that every single person on this planet has strengths and weaknesses, has good moments and bad moments. I mean, this is the human experience. So with compassion, you can embrace it all. It's not like only the good things count and I'm going to hide away the bad things. No, it's like saying, yes, this is who I am. I'm an authentic human being who's got good parts and bad parts. Sometimes I like there's a meditation teacher who says that the goal of practice is just to become a compassionate mess. So what you're doing with self-compassion is you're becoming a compassionate mess. So you aren't perfect and you don't always get it right. It doesn't mean you still don't make mistakes in your relationships, for instance. But if you're compassionate about being the mess, then you aren't derailed by it. And then you can work from there, and then you can talk it through, and then you can start to make changes because you aren't expecting yourself to be perfect. So it's just a much more realistic way of being in the world, much more helpful.
Yeah, so let's talk about that perfection thing, because I don't know who started the rumor that, you know, you're supposed to be perfect.
Yeah.
Most of the people listening believe that, you know, nobody else has to be perfect, but they do. Well, maybe the men they're dating have to be perfect. But, you know, when I first came across your work, I was just blown away by this concept of, like, you know, when our self-esteem is conditionally based, it's fragile, right? And I remember, you know, growing up and, you know, just like, oh, I got an A. Oh, you're a good girl. Oh, I got a good job. You're a good girl, right? It's like, or he didn't call me back, I'm bad.
Yes.
So talk to me about this whole thing about self-worth and how we want to get off that roller coaster of having our self-worth be impacted, you know, by our judgment on our outcomes.
Yes, yes. So for most people, again, our sense of self-worth is based on success, right? So if we success, I don't know, in our work, or we succeed by getting that guy we want to date, or for women, I have to say, and the number one source of our self-esteem is a perceived appearance. You know, mm-hmm. So on a good hair day, our self-esteem is high, on a bad hair day is low, right? And so basically what that means is our sense of self-worth is constantly going up and down, because let's face it, we've got good days, we have bad days. Sometimes we get positive feedback, sometimes we get negative feedback. And so if your sense of self-worth is contingent on success, it's going to bounce around like a ping pong ball, right? What we know is self-compassion, especially if you compare it to this type of self-esteem, is much more stable. In other words, you can have compassion when you aren't looking your best, or have compassion when you fail, or compassion when you don't succeed. It actually steps in precisely where self-esteem deserts us, and that's when we fail or make a mistake or are feeling bad about ourselves. So the sense of self-worth linked to self-compassion, it's not about being, you know, being good or getting it right. It's just about being a human being worthy of love and respect. Like all human beings are worthy of love and respect. And that's where you get this thing of the compassionate mess. You know, even on days where you feel like an absolute mess, you are still worthy of love, respect, understanding, and support. You can still give that to yourself. So your sense of worthiness is very stable over time. And we actually did one study where we looked at, you know, your sense of self-worth 12 different times over an 8-month period. And it was much more stable with self-compassion as opposed to, you know, self-esteem, just judging yourself positively.
Wow, that's so powerful. So what would you say to a woman? Like, I just talked to someone this morning and she was like, here's my problem. I meet somebody and I get super excited about it. Maybe I go on one or two dates and then, you know, suddenly he kind of backs off or he disappears and I just start beating myself up and then I want to give up and I think, you know, why is this happening to me? How does self-compassion eradicate sort of the like it's only happening to me piece?
So that's actually a logical fallacy of the brain. It's actually a type of egocentrism that we, believe it or not, develop in adolescence. It's normal, we all do it, but it doesn't mean it's true, right? So like, if you're purely logically speaking, you know that no one's perfect and things happen to everyone. And, you know, we read the news, we talk to other people. We know this with our logical minds. But what happens emotionally when we fail or the guy doesn't call us back or whatever it is we feel as if something has gone wrong, as if this isn't supposed to be happening. You know, I'm sorry, the plan I signed up for was that everything will go perfectly till the day I die plan. Can I have my money back, please?
Yeah.
Something's gone wrong. Well, nothing has gone wrong. This is what it means to be a human being. So even though we know this logically, we don't really realize it emotionally. So in those difficult moments, we forget and we feel isolated from the rest of humanity. And believe it or not, our research shows that sense of isolation is one of the most damning aspects of not having self-compassion, right? When we feel we're supposed to be perfect and we aren't, we feel like, oh, it's just me, we feel all alone. And of course, for human beings, you know, being all alone basically means being food for the wolves, right?
We
feel connected. So what we do with self-compassion is we just remember our common humanity. Wait a second, this happens to everyone. You know, everyone goes, maybe not, they don't have the exact same experience, but they have their own version of it, right? So just for me, you know, I really got this message because my son's autistic, you know, and I remember when he first got diagnosed, I thought, you know, why me? Well, first of all, not only are there a lot of autistic kids, but, you know, whether or not it's autism, all parents struggle in one way or another with their children. I mean, they can be physical issues or mental health issues or just conflictual relationship. But in fact, what defines being a good mother, from my point of view, is you struggle with your children and you love them anyway and you do your best. And so, yeah, my particular form of the struggle was autism. But in a way, it doesn't even matter. You know, the fact is, everyone struggles in their relationship with their kids. Everyone struggles in their relationship with their romantic partners. Everyone struggles in their life. I mean, this is just part of what it means to be human. And so when we fight that and expect things to be perfect, we're just banging our heads against the wall of reality. Whereas when we accept, hey, you know, this is the way it is. How can I be with things not being perfect, with as much kind of center and balance and love and connectedness and kindness as I can be? And then after a while, that starts to be most important. You know, more important than are things going perfectly for me, it's just, is my heart open right now? Is my heart full of love? And if your heart's full of love, that's actually the more satisfying way to be, because it's, you know, you have more, it's not like you can always be full of love, but it's certainly much more stable than life being going perfectly well.
Well, yeah. And so if you're out there dating, right?
Yes.
And you're like setting yourself up going, okay, how can I be perfect?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Your heart is going to be closed versus I'm going to go and I'm just going to show up and it's actually not going to be perfect.
Yes. Exactly.
I'm going to be with myself.
And he won't be perfect. And can you still try to be connected in those moments, grounded, present? And if you can be full of something I call loving, connected presence, which are actually the three components of self-compassion, which is kindness, common humanity, and mindfulness. If you go on a date and you are in a state of loving, connected presence, well, first of all, not to back out of the issue, but first of all, you're going to be a lot more attractive if you're in a state of loving, connected presence than in the state of, oh my God, am I look good enough? Is my hair look fine? Or if you're criticizing yourself, I can't believe I just said that, right? So other people are going to pick up on that. But even if regardless, the guy still, for whatever reason, isn't a match with you and doesn't call you back, the bottom line is you need the other person to do exactly what you want them to do in order for your heart to be open and for you to feel connected and present? Or are you able to have an open heart and feel connected and present on your own, just as a human being living this human life? And if you do, then again, you're going to just have much more resilience and more resources and more happiness, right? Just living your day-to-day life, even if things don't go perfectly in your romantic life. I have to say, I'm single right now and it's not going that well dating, but I'm okay. And it's not like we don't need people. It's not like if you have self-compassion that somehow you're a robot and you don't need a partner. Of course we're human beings and we need people, but we aren't so driven by this sense of insufficiency. We can just approach the whole thing from a place of fullness as opposed to a place of lacking. And so that's really the big difference.
I think, honestly, this is like so huge, because when you are showing up in that loving, present, connected space, you're also able to, and I think this is often missed out, you can also understand that the person sitting across from you is having their own day.
That's right. That's right. And who knows what's going on with them or what their history is or what their early family history was or anything, So again, we don't have to take it all so personally. That's the beauty of it.
It is. And then that makes it fun and it makes it right. And the last thing that I want to say about that, and maybe you can address this, is, in dating, there's really not much that you're in control over except yourself.
And even that's pretty marginal.
Exactly. It is. So what I love that you said, if I was going to highlight and underline this, I would say a compassionate mess. Because sometimes, dating just is that. It's a shit show. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, totally. Yeah.
He doesn't look like his picture. He's texting his girlfriend that he just broke up with, while you're waiting for the valet. So really, resilience, and this is sort of the last thing I want to talk about, because I talk about resiliency all the time, that it is if you're going to go out there, not only date, but actually be in a relationship with another flawed human, you have to have resiliency skills. So can you explain a little bit what that is and how self-compassion plays into that?
Yeah. So if you think about resilience, I like to think of, if you're I don't know. So the kids in our neighborhoods like to slam the mailboxes with baseball bats and break them. And so the clever people get rubber mailboxes. So even if they slam them, they bounce right back. Kind of like what it is to be resilient. I'm sorry, I just thought of that metaphor.
Yeah.
If someone hits you or life hits you or things happen, you can bounce back. That's what resilience is. You aren't shattered by things going wrong or things happening. You actually have the ability to maintain yourself and to get through it. You have inner strength and courage. Now, what we know is that self-compassion is actually one of the most powerful sources of strength and resilience we have. It's funny. Some people think it's a weakness. It's soft. Quite the opposite. Being rubber is much more, it's a much bigger strength than being really rigid, because rigid things can break. If you're flexible and pliant, then you can bounce back. So what happens with self-compassion, again, is if you support yourself in difficult times, if you're there for yourself, if you're kind to yourself, if you're understanding, if you treat yourself with respect, no matter how difficult the conditions or, what you did or what you didn't do, then you're just going to have so much more ability to get through the situation and, continue on.
Mm, so, I love that. And that and that impacts your ability to be a great partner, a great mom, a great son or daughter. I mean, it's, you know, it's kind of the key to life.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I'm so passionate about self-compassion. It's just amazing the incredible impact it can make. You know, and the really interesting thing about it is that it can be learned. It's a skill that can be learned. It's not like you're just naturally born compassionate or uncompassionate. You know, we've had real success with our various training programs we've developed teaching people how to be more self-compassionate. So even if this doesn't describe the way you are currently, there's absolutely hope for you, and you can learn to relate to yourself like you relate to a good friend. It's very possible.
Absolutely. And we have in the show notes, there's through Sounds True, there's some online self-compassion training. Literally, like, you know what, in my humble opinion, I would rather have you spend time learning how to do this than write your damn online profile. because if you are a self-compassionate, loving, present, connected human, it will show up in the profile that you write. Yeah. Right? This is like the meat. This is the foundation of like being the most loving human, fully expressed version of yourself. And that is what's irresistible. So definitely go in the show notes and check that out. It's going to be in the fall of 2017. So check that out. The other thing, oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, well, if people want to kind of get a sense of how self-compassionate they are, they can also take the self-compassion test. I have on my website. I developed a scale to measure it. So that may also be useful information for people.
Absolutely. Actually, again, like in your homework, I would definitely take that quiz when I've pointed clients to it. And they're like, yeah, I got that. And then they take it. They're like, oh, shit. I definitely need to work on this. So again, go to the link in the show notes. You have amazing resources on your website. You have meditations, you have exercises. You want to become a girl fan just like me of Dr. Kristen F. She's the bomb, diddybomb.com. if you were gonna have self-compassion and compassion for women that are dating, and you're going through it too, what's like the most shortcut tool that you could suggest to somebody, like in the moment, you know, of like, I'm really struggling right now with my love life?
I mean, like when you're on a date?
On a date, or the guy, you know, like, here's a great example. I had a client the other day who was talking about, well, she wasn't a client, actually. She should become a client. But her problem was this guy made a date with her. She got out of the shower at like 5 o'clock, ready to go meet him. And he texted her, hey, or hi. She was like, hi. And he basically canceled the date, you know. And it was super disappointing. And she'd had a bunch of super disappointing experiences. So there she is, you know, she got a towel on her head, towel wrapped around her body. Luckily, she hasn't put the mascara on. So there's no, you know, crying tears. But she's just like, honestly, when is this happening for me?
Yeah. So I would say, you know, just give yourself some sort of maybe a hug. Give yourself a hug if that feels comfortable. If it doesn't, put your hands on your heart, hold your own hand. You can actually do the hold your own hand thing when you're on the date itself. It doesn't look conspicuous. But really just let your body know that you are there for yourself. And yes, of course, you want to find a partner and all that. And it will happen when it's ready. But in the meantime, you aren't going to abandon yourself. You know, you're going to be there for yourself with love and connectedness and support and kindness. You're going to ask, you know, what do I need, and try to give it to yourself. And so therefore the bottom line is, it's almost like having a partner is, when it happens, that's great. But in the meantime, you still got your own back. You weren't half a person only to be completed by finding that man. You know, you're a full, authentic, total person now, and then anything else is gravy.
I love that. You are amazing. Ladies, make sure you check out more about Dr. Kristen F. on the show notes, her website. Check out her training that she's having coming up. Highly, highly recommend. Dr. Neff, thank you so much for being here. I really, really appreciate it. And ladies, hey, don't forget, date with dignity. We'll talk to y'all real soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for tuning into today's show. So if being in an intimate relationship in which you feel 100% seen, heard, and accepted by a high caliber man is a priority for you right now, and you're interested in seeing if you're a fit for working with me and my team at Dating with Dignity, here's what I want you to do. Just head over to DWDVIP, that's D as in dating, W, D as in dating, VIP.com, and book a call to speak with my team. We'll get on the phone with you for about 60 minutes, and you'll get crystal clear on what's stopping you from finding true love right now. We'll also take a look at what you want to create, what you want your whole life to look like when you're able to finally be fully expressed as a woman in a healthy relationship with an incredible guy. And if we can help you get from where you are right now to where you want to be, we will show you the fastest path possible that makes sense for you to do that. We help smart, successful women all over the world solve this one missing piece in their life so they can finally have it all. So to see if we can help you do the same thing, head over to DWDVIP.com. I'm Marnie Batista, and let's talk soon.